You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Jessica Love. Jessica is an incredible actor and illustrator. She is one of my dear classmates from Juilliard, Group 38, and I'm so happy to finally have the chance to sit down with her for the podcast. She's someone whose imagination and humor I've always admired. On a side note, my show Drunkelvania is closing April 15th. We can't extend again. We just have a few shows left, Saturday, April 8th, Thursday the 13th, Friday the 14th, and Saturday the 15th, all at 7:30 p.m. I love this show, and I'm really going to miss having it in my life, so if you want to come out and join us, you can find tickets at drunkelvania.com. I hope you enjoy the 70th episode of The Compass. What do you do to try to keep from going to the dark side as an artist?
Yeah.
And kind of tied up in that is, like, what is the dark side for you most often?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking through. It's interesting, right? Because, like, a certain degree of dark side is maybe necessary to be a three-dimensional person, and getting into a fight with yourself for having darkness doesn't help either, or it doesn't help me. This is like therapy. I'm just gonna talk and you're gonna look at me with empathy.
Yes.
For those of you at home, she's looking at me with great empathy.
Practiced empathy. No, that's true. It doesn't help to be mad at yourself for going to the dark side, although I've definitely done it.
Yeah. This is sort of a depressing answer, but I think I've always girded myself against real disappointment with low expectations. For myself and what my life is going to be. Jesus. It's true, though. I mean, I think when we did Showcase, I was fully prepared to not have a single response. I had made peace with that. And I was ready to live my life from that point forward with that having been what happened. I think that's how I approach auditions. The few times I've gotten a really good job that I really wanted, I haven't let myself it would lead to anything. God.
And are you saying that that's worked for you? Like, that helps you keep out of the dark side?
I mean, there's a degree to which it's efficient. It's sad. but yeah, I guess it's a kind of, like, thought management lithium. It keeps the highs from being too high, but I also...
How does that make you feel about auditioning then, though? Do you go into it at peace, or do you go into it feeling, like, already stressed out and low because you're like, I'm not going to get it?
No, it's a little more Buddhist than I'm making it sound. Like, it's a little... It's a little jollier. Like, it's less bleak than I'm making it sound. Yeah, I think maybe it's like a tenacious insistence for myself in my worldview on, like, the big picture and the degree to which whether or not I am a famous actor matters or doesn't matter in the larger scheme of things. And I think that it allows me to keep a sense of humor about it, and it prevents me from getting heartbroken every time I don't get the thing I want, which is almost all of the time.
Yeah. So keeping more of a perspective about the size of what you're doing in relation to the universe.
Yeah. And I do wonder whether that has been prohibitive in terms of allowing myself to be ambitious. Like, I think there are ways where I could have gone after it harder. I could have hustled harder. I could have sold myself more persistently. But, and I don't know at the end of the day whether that's a result of my admirable detachment or like professional cowardice. It's maybe a little bit of both.
I mean, it can be all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I understand that. I think I have a little bit of that too, of like wanting people to come to me as opposed to
pushing
myself on them.
Which
is hard in this industry.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's probably like a form of pride, like a refusal to, yeah, it's like a, if you don't want it, that's not my problem. Mm. I don't know. That wasn't really what you were asking me, though.
No, I think you answered it partly. If that's part of how you deal with not going to the dark side, is just setting your expectations lower.
I think
makes sense.
There are more, like the most active answer is that I have another thing that I love to do. And I try to do that as much as possible because that is another, it's another way that I can scratch the same creative itch. That's a gross analogy.
Well, and you can do it by yourself for the most part.
And I can do it by myself.
So this is illustrating, right?
This is masturbating.
Okay, great. Both? Either.
This is illustrating. Which I'm only now starting to try to parlay into an actual side career or second career.
Mm-hmm.
Before, it fulfilled the same function. It was like a self-esteem lockbox that, like, no matter how profoundly I failed at my chosen career, there was this other thing that I hadn't chosen to do that we will never know if I would fail or succeed at it,
right?
Because I wasn't gonna fucking wager that. So I guess that's the...
Yeah, having another outlet.
Yeah, that's probably the first thing I reach for.
Have you been doing that since you were a kid?
I have.
Yeah.
And I think...
Had you always been illustrating, or had you been drawing, and when does it become when did it become a storytelling thing, I guess?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That's an interesting question. That's a smart question because it was... it's the same impulse as wanting to act and play make-believe, but I just have more control over the story. But it was always telling a story to myself. It was always, like, very narrative and character-driven melodramas early on. I'd work up these tragic... plots, and I'd be in tears drawing the, like, destitute orphan prostitute alone in the rain on the heath.
I think we read all of the same children's books.
Yeah, I think same ingredients.
It's so funny because I remember vividly, for some reason, one day in acting class freshman year, I think when Richard Feldman had, like, led us through something where we were, like, basically all pretending to be babies and then, like, growing through childhood.
Oh, I remember
up into being an adult. And, like, at one point in, like, elementary age children,
you and I were both off on our own playing make-believe.
We were both the isolated children.
Totally.
I don't remember if I remember this in the moment or, like, us talking about it afterwards, or you being like, I would just be myself making up stories. And because I saw you as such, like, a social, vivacious person.
That's really weird.
First year of grad school, this was my perception of you.
Yeah.
And to see you as a kid as this, like, isolated, imaginative child, I was like, oh,
we're the same.
We're the same.
Yes, totally.
I thought I lived in Little House on the Prairie.
So did I. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up pretty isolated, like, and I liked that.
Yeah.
I didn't, and who knows what that's about. Like, I remember not wanting, I remember finding it frustrating when I would try to play with other kids that they kept fucking up the story. Like, their focus was all over the place. They did not appreciate the gravity of the stakes.
They did not and know like how they to
kept,
do it.
They kept introducing all these anachronisms that really bothered me. And if I couldn't have a complete verisimilitudinal universe, I wasn't interested. It was a waste of my fucking time.
Yeah. So drawing, you could do it all by yourself.
Exactly.
Okay.
It is. It's, you know, more control. Ultimately, I think this is why I love acting, and especially the theater, is I think it tempers me. And I think at the end of the day, I'm not that great on my own. And I like having other people around once in a while.
In that structured world.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now I get to do it with professionals. I just didn't want
they
to do
have
it with,
the focus.
With shitty children, yeah, with their shitty imaginations.
Yeah. So when you're illustrating now, are you mostly working on your own? Are you working with a writer? How's that going?
Well, the thing I'm mostly working on now is a book that I wrote and illustrated, so it's complete,
it's all yours.
Ultimate power. It's all mine. But I haven't actually written the words yet. It's going to be a mostly visual book.
This is like the Mermaid Parade one?
This is Julian at the Mermaid Parade, which I just heard from my editor we might have to change the title because the Mermaid Parade itself is copywritten.
Oh, and there's, by Coney Island?
Yeah. Mm. And there's a chance that they would, you know, waive the whatever.
Embrace it.
Yeah. But if they don't, it would be too late by the time. It would be too close to our publishing date. So we might have to find another title. And I don't.
You're so attached to it now.
I just don't have any good ideas. If you have any ideas.
I mean, they'd all be pretty stupid. The Seashell Parade.
I'll take it.
You know.
Anyway. But
so
yeah.
How long have you been working on that project?
I started it a while ago. I haven't worked on it, like, with consistency and focus, really. I got the idea a couple years ago, and then there have been a couple, like, concentrated bursts of creativity, and they kept happening while I was doing shows, interestingly. While I was doing, like, plays that I had a very tiny part in, like I would come on, do my chunk, and then I had the rest of the time to kill backstage. And so having this bounded, like, 3 hours every day was really useful for me because yeah. I'm not great at structuring my own time. I'm trying to learn how to do that, but having the scaffolding of that daily routine to hang it on was really helpful. So that's where I did the first draft, and that's where I did the second draft.
And then when did, like, making it professional and having an editor, when did that happen? Because that's exciting.
Yeah, that happened like a little over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
I got a literary agent I had finished my first draft of illustrations for the book and, like, wrote out the description of the story. And then I wrote an email to every famous or powerful person I'd ever met or worked with and was like, if you know anyone who knows a literary agent who represents children's book authors and illustrators, give me a call. And Mary Louise Parker, who I knew from doing the Snow Geese, was like an amazing patron saint to me. And she's like, I forgot how to say this stock phrase, I will get this thing published or die trying or something. And she was about to have a book come out, this collection of essays called Dear You.
I heard her do some interviews around the time that
Dear Mr. You.
Yeah.
And they're great. They're really, really special and funny, and they're awesome. She's a great writer. But she sent it to her literary agent, whose fiance had like a few clients that were illustrators or children's book authors. And she really liked it. And we met up, and she's like exactly my age and just this lovely creature who signed me. It was like this broad stroke of luck. And then she, you know, did her job and was like, these are the things that happen now. And we did the things and we submitted it. She like made a list of the publishing companies where she thought it would have a good home.
Mm-hmm.
And the one she wanted for us most was this company, Candlewick Press, they just do children's books, and they're beautiful. They're like real special works of art. And she's like, I'd love it if we could end up here, but probably not.
Yeah.
And we did get rejected by them. But then a couple weeks later, the manuscript had landed on a junior editor's desk or some other editor. And she's like, I know we were originally passed on this, but if it's still available, I really love it. And I'd love to make it happen. So we were like, fuck yes. And so that's where we ended up.
Oh my gosh. So what point in the process are you now?
So I am working with my art editor. I have a words and story editor, and that's not what she's her title, but there's one.
You know, that part.
That part. I speak English. And then there's
the English part of
it. And then I have an art editor. Her name is Anne, without an E.
Okay.
And she's the best.
What kinds of conversations do you guys have?
It's really interesting.
I know nothing about that, but it sounds delightful.
It's storytelling stuff. Yeah, it's like
a sounding board.
I'm trying to think of a good example. Like,
is it really little details? Like, oh, the gesture this character is making with his hand doesn't read as what you're trying to communicate or whatever.
I mean, it's stuff like that. It's like stuff for continuity, like little stuff like this table has a drawer in this picture and it doesn't have one in this picture. But it's also broader storytelling ideas, like in the first, you know, the page that's like glued to the back of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Those are called the end pages, and they often have like a picture on them that is to do with the world of the story, but isn't,
or like a pattern or something. Yeah.
Yeah, it's evocative of the world, but isn't necessarily part of the plot. So in my book, it's a picture of the main character Julian and his abuela at like a water aerobics class. She's with all these other older women like doing water aerobics, and Julian is underwater, kind of looking up at their legs, like pretending to be a mermaid. And so it was my art editor's idea to have the end pages at the back of the book be the same picture, but all of the old ladies are turned into mermaids with their bathing suit patterns being like the pattern on their tail. So she comes up with good ideas like that.
Aww.
It's like a good director.
Guide you in the right direction.
Yeah, like just making it, helping you do the thing you wanted to do. It's cool.
So I know you said that you were hoping to make the illustration kind of become your side job when you're not acting. And I don't know what it's like. Like, is publishing this book the first step to that? Is it not very financially fulfilling and you're trying to find other jobs with illustration? Or like...
Oh, no, I'll never have to work again. I'm going to be rich.
One children's book is all it takes.
Yeah, it's that big railroad, big oil, big children's book.
Yeah, I'm just curious, like, thinking of yourself as a freelancer, as a businesswoman, as we all have to.
Totally. What's the hustle?
How are you kind of piecing together the hustle between acting jobs?
Yeah, so I'm right at the beginning of figuring that out. I've always had people over the years, like, reach out to me in a piecemeal way, be like, hey, a friend of mine wants someone to do a portrait of her daughter. And I'll be like, yes, I will do that.
Great.
This is what I will charge you. And so it'll just, like, happen. But I've never actively looked for work in that way. So I'm making a website. I'm going to try and... Because the stuff I enjoy the most is illustration. And you asked earlier, like, what's the difference between a drawing and an illustration? And I guess an illustration is meant to convey an attendant message, maybe. Like, it's, I don't know, it's depicting something for a reason. I don't really know.
Yeah.
But I want to get work doing, like, wedding suite illustrations, stuff like that. People are always getting married.
People are always getting married.
People do keep getting married.
That's a great idea. I'm sure people would love that.
I'm gonna do more children's books, but it's too slow of a process for that to, like, I need faster gigs as well. So, but I think having a book published will help me seem like more of a real person, more of a, like,
yeah,
pedigreed person.
Yeah, of course, since this isn't the medium that you have a degree in or whatever.
Right, it's my cred. So yeah, like, I'm gonna try and get work doing wedding suite illustrations. And then something that I did in college occasionally was I would do murals for kids' rooms. So that's a fun thing to do sometimes. Like, now this wall is a jungle. Now this wall is a scene from Vietnam.
Oh, I went too far.
60.
Erase.
Oh,
jungle shit. Again.
Just a jungle.
Back to the jungle.
Just a regular jungle. This is.
I wanted to ask, because I know you've done a lot of regional work,
mm-hmm,
regional theater. How have you dealt with having to leave the city often, or kind of like
roots?
Yes, that's the word.
You were doing a roots.
You know what I meant.
A roots dance.
Seeds, roots. You know, you're from California. You've lived here for a long time, but do you enjoy working out of town? Do you enjoy having to juggle all of those things? Or
I do like working out of town. I do. I mean, it depends on the show, obviously, but I've been pretty lucky in that most of the plays I've done out of town have had really fun casts, which just makes it camp. I mean, there's a way in which working out of town is more fun because it's not your real life.
Yeah.
And you can't spend your day off running errands. You have to spend your day off going to the weird, like, local foot massage place and, like, trying to find the best bookstore. And,
yeah,
you know, it feels like a... I like that peripatetic vagabond feeling. It makes me feel more like an actor, weirdly, than when I'm here and doing a play.
Yeah, I guess I'm curious about that. Like, how do you maintain your community here when you're leaving a lot?
Oh, I just let it fall apart.
Or how do you feel like you need to maintain a connection with these casts that you build this world with?
Right.
In another state for 2 months and then disappear from? Or have you found kind of that you're okay just letting it be what it is and leave it behind?
I guess like most, I mean, in terms of maintaining the relationship, your relationships with the casts of the plays that you do out of town, it seems like they're so often all New Yorkers that like you see each other back in New York anyway. But then the few who are like locals, anytime you go back to that area, you have this one friend.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in terms of maintaining relationships in the city, it's harder. It's harder if you're in a relationship, I think. I mean, yeah, I think it helps to have clear expectations to begin with about what, in a relationship specifically, your rules for being out of town are going to be. And I'm not talking so much about, like, are we going to cheat on each other? Because ideally,
right,
you're not.
But what you like, expect communication-wise. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think it's easy to misunderstand each other. You ignore each other and then you fight because you haven't had the easy daily communication that you get from like living with a person.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's a way in which, and again, too much of this I think is really difficult and can be taxing on a relationship, as you know. But, like, once in a while, I think it can be really good for...
I think to once in individuate. A while it can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not all year.
Not all the time.
But, like, once every couple years to be like, oh, right, I...
Yeah, we're individuals.
Yeah, there are some things that I like to do that
yeah.
my person doesn't, and that's fine, and I can do them anyway. And it's just, I don't know, I think as artists... there's a kind of positive narcissism that there's room that's made for it when you're like just out of town working on your...
Yeah, and you're in your own space.
You're in your own space and it's all about you. No, but like, you know, you get to be interested in yourself.
Yeah.
And in the way that the little mystery of like, who am I in the world and how can I get better at the thing I'm doing? And I don't know. I think I like all those things about working out of town.
How are you feeling about New York right now? Do you think you're here for the long term?
I want to put my hands around its neck and choke it.
I know we're just coming out of winter, so it's an unfair time to ask.
I want to kick it right in the neck. I don't know.
We've been here for what, like a dozen years now almost.
Yeah.
I'm only asking because I'm thinking about the same thing.
Yeah. It's brutal, dude. Like, I'm so, and this isn't like really an issue for me because I am not having a kid anytime soon, but I think about that. Like the actors, like the actor couples who are able to make that work in this city, it seems like a heart attack.
It's tough.
I mean, it's hard to imagine that I wouldn't totally freak out.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting that that's what you think of, though. Is that
I know.
When you're like thinking of the future, that's what comes to mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like and I
lugging a child up the subway steps.
Yeah. It's that and it's all the stuff that I had in such superfluity growing up that was so essential in making me. It's all the parts of myself I like the best are the parts that are
That come from where you grew up?
Yeah.
Really?
I think so. The, like, I feel most myself when I'm in, like, deep in some natural landscape. Like, I've never been comfortable in a city. I don't know. It's hard to imagine growing up without that. I don't know why I'm so fixated on the kid question. I think about it a lot. But
what do you think of moving to LA?
I mean, that's the only...
How far is Santa Barbara from LA?
2 hours. It's 2 hours north.
But a very different 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to be so anti-LA, and I didn't really have any, like, evidence to base it on. Yeah. I think I was just being... I didn't want to live where I grew up. And I like doing plays.
Yeah. Not as successful out there.
But LA is really nice. I mean, it's the same... You do the same shit, but you do it in people's really beautiful, cozy houses and on their decks, and you get to go outside without being, like, slammed into. I don't know
that your parents are pretty artistic, but I usually ask, like, what does your family make of you deciding to be an artist for your life?
It's funny. It's like, I have
most
such...
of your family is artistic.
But... I know. It would be what I do and what my sister does. My sister's an actor also, is fully the equivalent of, like, having gone to law school or become a doctor. Like, we couldn't be...
Compared to your parents.
Well, I think just in terms of it aligning with their understanding of, like... the way they would want to be spending their time. Like, they don't... It's interesting. It's something that I think I have been able to take for granted. Like, they don't think it's a curiosity. They totally get it. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, it's interesting to have my parents understand the financial turmoil that this career can, like, wreak on your psyche in such a first-hand peer-to-peer way.
Can you tell the listeners what your parents do, just so they know?
Yeah, my parents are both visual artists. They have a business together called Leaves of Grass Clay and Fiber Arts. adcockstudios.com. Mm. My dad's a potter, and my mom is a basket weaver. And... they have made their living running this studio out behind our house since, like, a couple years before I was born. And that's
Which
been there.
It's pretty incredible.
It is. It is.
It's a long time to sustain yourself as an artist.
Totally. And they have some shit figured out in terms of, like, they lead a very simple life. Like, they... You know, they wake up and meditate together, and they both do yoga, like, 3 times a week. My mom teaches yoga for extra money, and my dad plays in a dad band, and they love what they do. They live in the middle of the woods, and it's beautiful. And, you know, they have, like, the cabin is tiny, and they have they don't have, like, nice cars or nice stuff, but they love their life. Like, the amount of time they spend doing shit that they hate is pretty small, all things considered. Like,
that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and they built their life that way on purpose, which is a pretty cool thing to see succeed.
Do you think about that much when you're thinking about, like, the day-to-day financial struggles of your life now?
Yes.
Like, do you learn from things that they did, or think about, like, oh, what did they do when I was a kid or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I've been
So I have a therapist, mm-hmm. and one of the things that I wanted to work on with her is like learning how to make and accomplish long-term goals. How does a person organize their life, their finances?
Don't know what your job is.
Yeah.
A year from
when
now.
You have when your life is completely unpredictable and inconsistent, like how do you get some stability? And when I told my mom that I was doing that, she like practically wept with delight. She's like, I wish to Christ I had done that when I was your age, because I've learned all of this through mistakes. But they're certainly not mistakes that we ever felt. I mean, we had it good. It was funny. We grew, like, Santa Barbara's a kind of a cushy town. And so we had a lot of rich friends, but we never really felt the gap. Like, it's not like, I mean, sometimes people would disappear and go skiing and we're like, what do you mean you're going to be gone for a week?
What does that mean? Skiing.
What is ski? But like, we didn't miss out on much. I got to have braces. My Nana paid for them.
Nice.
No big deal. Thanks, Dr. Kuhn. That was my orthodontist.
What is it like for you now to have your sister living in New York and to be pursuing something similar to you? And do you guys talk about it much, or do you just see each other as sisters socially and not talk about it? Or
we definitely talk about it. It's interesting. So we're 6 years apart in age.
Yeah.
So while we have known each other our whole lives, we didn't really become friends until she was well into her 20s, because...
Right, you weren't in high school at the same time.
Yeah, and then I was like, she was finishing up high school and I was gone for the last 6 years and then moved to New York and have been here ever since. So in a way, we have, I think, less, like, sisterly baggage in that way, if it makes sense, like, because we weren't teenagers together. Mm-hmm. So it's not really that different from the way I relate to, like, my other girlfriends who are actors. I just want her to succeed harder than I want them to succeed. But she's done so well for herself, and with such like she moved out here wanting to give it a shot without, like, before she decided to try and go to grad school and get buried under an avalanche of debt like some idiots at this table. She wanted to like see how far she could get just on moxie. And she moved here, like, got a money job, like, babysitting, and then started, like, going on open calls all the time, like, waiting in the lines, chorus line style, and was doing it and, like, booking jobs from those, and got an agent from one of the jobs she booked, and, like, has shot a bunch of short films and a feature, and... like, all on the force of her own guts. I'm so proud of her. I don't know that I would have been able to keep marching out there. It's cool. It's really cool to have seen her move out here and learn how tough she is. It's nice. It's really, really nice having her here. It's kind of cool. It's like we have our own wing of the house where our parents can't, like, hear what we're talking about.
Well, they are on the other coast.
I'm pretty sure they can't hear what we're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, that's so special.
It's nice. It's really nice.
Is there anything in the past couple years that you're really proud of that you want to tell me about? Like a lesson you've learned
or no. something?
Doesn't have to be like a big event, but like something you've learned.
What am I proud of? I'm proud of my book. It's yeah. something that that is mine from start to finish, and that I didn't really think it would work, but I kept going anyway, and then it did. And I think seeing that I am capable of making a thing happen was really important for me. Do you remember when Ed Norton came to one of our community meetings? Mm-hmm. Do you remember what he said? Do you remember his talk at all?
I mean, vaguely.
I remember that he had a nice body and small hands, and that he said this thing about what an existentially impossible position it is to be when you're out of work, when you're an actor who can't do, when you have to wait for someone to give you permission to do the thing that you do, and how he's like, the best advice I can give you is produce your own work. Either produce a play, write a play, doesn't matter if it's good, just realizing that you have the autonomy to make that happen will change the way you think about yourself and your ability to work. And I think that's true. Things that felt impossible feel less impossible now, like unrelated things, just because
yeah.
I made a thing happen.
Yeah. Can I ask what brought you the impetus to start this particular book by yourself?
So I'd illustrated books before. I'd done one that I'd been just hired to do as a freelance job. Mm-hmm. And then there was this one I worked on when I was in college that my college sweetheart wrote and that I illustrated sort of as like a senior project. Mm-hmm. But I'd never done one on my own. But the thing that gave me the idea was my ex-boyfriend had a sibling, and his eldest sibling came out to their family as trans several years ago when he was in his, I think, 50s. I mean, he'd had a life.
Yeah.
He was married. His partner knew, but no one else did. And from what he told me, their family had a variety of reactions. And one of the things that was said is like, what am I supposed to tell, like one of the other siblings, like, what am I supposed to tell your nieces, like, that you're their uncle now or something like that? And I remember just thinking something like, well, yeah, that is what you should tell them. They're kids. All things are equally
yeah.
mundane and incredible, and like, just tell them that. But then I started, it's interesting because it, throughout the course of working on this book, it started to become, being trans sort of seems to have had this like cultural limelight moment.
Right.
And so there's a part of me that's a little uncomfortable with it, with feeling like the book is like exploitive or piggybacking on that in some way,
but it started from something that you were witnessing or experiencing.
So I started reading these blogs of families who had...
Is it about a trans kid?
It's
about the kid's perception of...
It's not spelled out in the book. It's... Uh-huh. You could read Julian is gay, you could read him as trans. My idea started, though, that he's trans, but he, right. Or maybe he's just interested in mermaids and dress up.
Mm-hmm. That's such a weird thing, though, because I feel like you're right. There is like a moment happening in awareness or in pop culture, but this country is so huge.
Sure.
And there are places where that's not even a blip on the radar.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Where it's very true. Maybe a book in the library could be...
Could make a difference.
Register with someone who's never even encountered this, you know?
That's the hope. But I... Yeah, I started poking around the internet, and there aren't really many books for kids where that's... It feels like part of the story in any way except for super, like, clunky and didactic. But there was nothing beautiful, and there was nothing... magical or so I knew I wanted to write a story about this trans kid, and then as I was reading these blogs like family blogs of parents with trans kids all over the country, this theme that emerged was this fascination with mermaids, which, like, yeah, a lot of six-year-old girls are fascinated with mermaids, but specifically with trans kids, it has to do with the fact that it's a magical creature that doesn't have genitals, that doesn't have, like...
It presents as a beautiful woman, but without genitals.
Yeah, without having to deal with, like, that source of anxiety.
Totally.
And then I thought about the mermaid parade in Coney Island and what an amazing, like, inclusive, like, celebration that... Have you ever been to the mermaid parade?
I've never been. I've just observed from afar.
I mean, it's pretty great. It's very Coney Island. Like, it's campy. It's, like...
Yeah, it's not, like, polished.
It's not polished. It's rough. Like, there are some... There's like, people show up drunk. There's every size and shape. And, like, people go for all kinds of different reasons. But it's, you know, it's very New York. It's very, like...
It's an event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, that's where the...
Yeah, I was just curious.
That's where the idea came from.
Two questions to wrap it up. Is there anything, like, concrete besides... the illustration road that you reach for when you're really feeling in the dark place, like a book or music or somewhere you go in the city?
I go to Greenwood Cemetery.
Yeah.
It's my favorite place in New York, Greenwood Cemetery and like Grand Central. I like a lot too.
Do you just like walking around, or do you go and write in your journal? Or
I like walking around. I mean, it has to do with the part of me that is centered by being outdoors in some trees with some birds.
Yeah.
And not a lot of people around. I find, like, crowds and the hustle draining, and I find silence and nature extremely rejuvenating. So, yeah, that's what I will do. If I'm feeling... upset or hating myself or just too, like, trapped in my own boring little struggle, the best thing for me is to get outside and walk. And that's... And there is something about that place, too. The, like... It's like a literary trope to describe graveyards as peaceful. I never really spent time hanging out in one until I lived near this one. But they are... And there is something nice about having all these names, all these stories that you're never going to know, surrounded by, like, the creaking trees and the cardinals and the geese walking around and, like, maybe one person visiting a friend who's dead. That's very tender and vast. So that's what I like to do.
I just keep thinking about in the Anne of Green Gables.
It's very
series.
Anne of Green Gables.
I think it's Anne of the Island when she's in college, and she would always go to this cemetery as well.
Oh my God, totally.
Anyway, and then the last question is, have you seen anything lately that you would want to recommend of any art form?
I thought you asked me if I'd seen Nathan lately.
Have you seen Nathan Lane lately?
I haven't. I heard it's wonderful.
Have you seen anything lately that you would like to recommend?
Like a play or
anything?
Any kind of thing?
A play, movie, book, exhibit, whatever.
Vanity Fair at the Pearl. I think Eric Tucker is a genius director.
Yeah.
I think...
Are they in the old Signature Space now?
Yeah.
Am I making that up?
Yeah.
No, okay.
I just think he's... I think he's a fantastic director. The, like, density of the way that he imagines a story, there are always, like, three or four things happening on stage at once that are telling the story. I don't know. We'll see anything that he does, and I very much enjoyed this production, so that's my recommendation.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much for doing this with me.
Listening to the Compass podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.